This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Oh, Dr. Hawking, we had such a beautiful dream. What went wrong?
Don't feel bad, Lisa. Sometimes the smartest of us can be the most childish.
Even you?
No, not me. Never.
I guess everyone has a different vision for the perfect world.
Wow, Mom, that's very profound.
Hey, you read that off my screen.
And we're back. This is Geek Squawks, and as you may have heard that clip early on, we're doing a tribute to Professor Stephen Hawking. And like, he's one of those things like, where do you even begin to do a show for a tribute for someone like him? He's possibly the smartest man that's ever lived on Earth.
It's not even a case of where do you begin. I mean, it's even understanding half of what he's done is next to impossible. I read one really nice tribute to him, which said that basically, you know, we may have to wait another 100 years before we even have the technology to test
his theories
and ideas. And that's the reason he never won a Nobel Prize, because he's a theoretical physicist, and they don't give prizes out to people who work in the theoretical field. It has to be
proven. And the sad thing is that, you know, the Nobel Prize will never be awarded posthumously as well. So, you know, it's just that will be an elusive thing unless they decide to change in the near future.
I guess he wasn't really after that kind of recognition, because otherwise he wouldn't have worked in that field.
He was one individual who could only move like a slight muscle in his chin to communicate and probably, you know, give a smile or a grin in the face, and that's about it. But he spent all his life after the age of 21, when he was diagnosed with ALS, all his life wandering in his mind, traveling through, you know, space and time, all just by sitting down and thinking and theorizing all the possible, you know, ways that why we exist.
One of the great revelations of the space age has been the perspective it has given humanity on ourselves. When we see the Earth from space, we see ourselves as a whole. We see the unity and not the divisions. It is such a simple image, with a compelling message: one planet, one human race. We are here together, and we need to live together with tolerance and respect. We must become global citizens. I have been enormously privileged, through my work, to be able to contribute to our understanding of the universe. But it would be an empty universe indeed if it were not for the people I love and who love me. We are all time travelers, journeying together into the future. But let us work together to make that future a place we want to visit. Be brave, be determined, overcome the odds. It can be done.
Yeah, and just the very task of translating that information, given the very limited mobility that he had, actually putting that information out there, writing books and giving lectures, and, you know, just the amount of time that it takes to do things letter by letter by, you know, twitching a facial muscle or whatever. It's quite astonishing that he had time to do all of this stuff and still appear in episodes of The Simpsons and Big Bang Theory and whatever. You know, it's amazing that with all of that, he just didn't take himself too seriously. Mm.
And also, one of the fascinating things is that I was looking up at I was watching some YouTube videos about him and his life, and I came across this fascinating story about how long he actually takes to give a response during interviews that we've seen him give. He actually spends weeks trying to craft out the response that, you know, interviewers would normally send the question in before, because he's not one that would give you a response immediately. He can give you small yes-no responses immediately because that's programmed within his system itself. But for a full, complete answers that we've heard him speak, he takes weeks to craft that just one sentence. And the effort that one would put in just to give you more of an assurance of what life is, for me, that's just mind-blowing in terms of we're fully able-bodied human beings here, and yet we spend time, you know, discussing on or, you know, arguing about things that really don't take us that far away from the whole existence of life itself.
Oh, sure. But you also wonder if the illness is part of what made him such an effective communicator, because he had to pretty much ration the words that he used. So he had to be very effective and, you know, very imaginative and conjure up an image, because he couldn't spend minutes and minutes like I'm doing now, tying myself up in knots. And, you know, he had to be very pithy and to the point and deliver his information in as few words as possible so that he could race through all of this stuff. Quite he's amazing.
Amazing. You know, he shook the world with more than 150 papers, and dozens of which have become renowned. And he's written many books about it. I think the Brief History of Time, I remember when I read it when I was in Form 5 about 15, 16 years ago. And I won't lie, because honestly, some of it just doesn't make any sense to me.
No,
it's really, it's not hard to understand, but it's hard to just digest that and think about it, to visualize what he actually said.
Yeah, because he's challenging so many of the notions of the fabric that you see around you. He's delving into things that it is very difficult to get a picture of. And those are things that I think that really advanced mathematics helps you to see, because you can start to see the structure that it makes. Mm.
If there is one thing you want people to understand about your work, bearing in mind that most people will never understand anything about your work, what would that thing be?
Imaginary time. People think it's something you have in dreams, or when you're up against a deadline. But it's a well-defined concept. Imaginary time is like another direction in space. It's the one bit of my work science fiction writers haven't used, because they don't understand it.
And I don't understand that stuff at all. So, you know, I really, really struggle with it. But his ideas of the singularity at the at the heart of the Big Bang, and also at the heart of things like black holes, and the radiation that escapes from black holes, even though the commonly held belief has been that nothing can escape from a black hole.
Yeah.
You know, once we get to the point where we can start proving all of these theories, it's going to be just magic, I think.
What was really fascinating to think about that, you know, I've prepared like a whole bunch of, you know, notes here in terms of, you know, what I want to talk about, you know, Stephen Hawking, but we're not even, you know, touching the surface here of what I've written down, because when I'm writing all this info about what he's done and what he's achieved, what fascinated me the most is when I had to stop and realize just how much, you know, how lucky we are. And how much we've progressed with his presence on Earth in this short space of time that he had, and with the limited capabilities of, you know, movement and you know, ability that he had. But we feel like with his knowledge that he's given us, we're that much closer to understanding the entire existence of our universe, how it came about and what's out there. That itself is like, wow, we as this one human race, and we tend to not look at it in a very, you know, serious matter. We tend to look at each individual into what country you're from and, you know, what's your political background and where we're moving forwards. But Hawking is that one person that always just ensured us that, like, there's actually a whole lot more.
Oh, a lot more. And also one of the really nice things about all of this is, you know, we tend to think of everything as being done by teams and committees. You know, when we look at our gadgets and our devices, they're not usually made by one person. One person may have the vision for that. Mm. But a lot of Stephen Hawking's theories just existed in his mind.
It
was, it's his brain that worked all of this stuff out. He wasn't sitting in a room with 30 other people and, you know, they're all kind of discussing this and the other. Mm. It's all going on inside his head. It really is an incredible thing to imagine. Mm.
And actually, I was looking at some of the polls of greatest physicists of the 20th century. And, you know, to my surprise, and I think to a lot of people, like, Hawking is absent in at least...
Oh, really?
Or at least, you know, was crawling at the bottom of the, you know, top 20 greatest physicists of all time in the 20th century.
But I think that's also because we're in a kind of an era of televisual physicists, you know, Brian Cox and Michio Kaku, you know, all of these guys, Neil deGrasse Tyson.
We have
these guys who are fantastic at explaining to the public, and they're great minds as
great
well.
Great minds as well, yeah. Mm.
But, you know, they do come across very well on TV, and their impact may be, you know, overblown by the fact that the public is aware of them, because normally we're not aware of scientists. Mm.
And also, it's quite fitting that, you know, for us here in Asia at least, you know, Professor Stephen Hawking passed away on Pi Day, the day that, you know, because he basically... It took what Albert Einstein discovered to a whole new different level in terms of understanding the Big Bang, the black hole itself. And like you mentioned as well, the black hole is... We only know what the black hole is because of, you know, the Hawking theory itself, right? And because of, you know, it doesn't mean that the black hole is black. That's the first thing itself. Anyways, we'll come back and we'll talk about some of the things that probably Hawking has warned us about before he left us, and how serious should we take, you know, some of the things that he said, knowing that he was, you know, probably arguably the smartest man ever lived on planet Earth. We'll be right back. BFM 89.9.
I am very aware of the preciousness of time. Seize the moment. Act now. I have spent my life traveling across the universe, inside my mind. Through theoretical physics, I have sought to answer some of the great questions. But there are other challenges, other big questions which must be answered, and these will also need a new generation who are interested, engaged, and with an understanding of science. How will we feed an ever-growing population? Provide clean water, generate renewable energy, prevent and cure disease, and slow down global climate change. I hope that science and technology will provide the answers to these questions, but it will take people, human beings with knowledge and understanding, to implement these solutions.
Bankers, financiers, and moneymakers. BFM 89.9.
Do you think that God can intervene in the universe as he wants, or is God too bound by the laws of science?
The question of whether God is bound by the laws of science is a bit like the question, can God make a stone that is so heavy that he cannot lift it? I don't think it is very useful to speculate on what God might or might not be able to do. Rather, we should examine what he actually does with the universe we live in. All our observations suggest that it operates according to well-defined laws. These laws may have been ordained by God, but it seems that he does not intervene in the universe to break the laws, at least not once he had set the universe going.
And we're back, and we're doing a tribute to Professor Stephen Hawking. And earlier on, we just were still quite, you know, dumbfounded in the sense of how do we even do a show to, you know, do a tribute for him? So many things to cover.
Well, we'd need a very advanced physicist to be sitting here with us, and then we'd need a translator for the physicist, and yeah, it would be quite a palaver.
Right. So Stephen Hawking has warned us about a few things before he sadly passed away. One of the things that we've mentioned about this as well is, you know, AI.
Yes.
They may replace humans. You know, he said that I fear AI may replace humans altogether. If people design computer viruses, someone will design AI that improves and replicates itself. This will be a new form of life that outperforms humans. We've talked about this many times, and recently, you know, you mentioned Dr. Michio Kaku. I listened to one of his podcasts recently on Curiosity, and you know, he talked about the convergence of human and robots and merging them together. And yes, you know, later on, we'll have like an avatar that we could then use that avatar to travel to space and explore space itself.
Yeah, I mean, there are all kinds of things, possibilities that we have with this machinery. I think, for me, I think the fears of AI are a little bit overblown, because we're making the assumptions that those machine intelligence organisms will think in the same way that we do, which is, you know, one species has to be dominant over another. We're not going to know how they think. That's one of the dangers, but I think it's also one of the greatest possibilities as well, because I don't think that this super, or at least I hope that this super intelligent sort of next generation of computers are going to have the same kind of weaknesses that humans have when it comes to, you know, the idea of a machine being Skynet and eradicating humans from the world. I don't think that's going to happen. I think it would be perfectly possible that the machines would go, well, actually, a lot of what you guys are doing is wrong. You need to change and do this. And if you don't do this, something nasty is going to happen to you. But I don't think that those machines are going to set out to dominate us.
Yeah, well, Hawking did say, like, you know, AI could be either the best thing or the worst thing that will happen to humanity. And I guess, you know, his words needs to be revisited. We got to sort of shift the goal of AI from creating a pure, undirected artificial intelligence to creating a beneficial intelligence.
Absolutely.
That would probably
be... We have to be aware of what it is that we're creating, especially when we start to talk about self-replicating or self-advancing machinery. If we do have AI that starts to write the next generation of AI, yes, we do have to have those kind of safeguards in place. But I would like to think that we're looking at the good side rather than the bad side.
Yeah.
Thinking about this universe that you think about, what worries you the most about the future of the universe?
I am not worried about the future of the universe. The universe will continue whatever happens. But the future of the human race and of life on Earth is much less certain. We are in danger of destroying ourselves by our greed and stupidity.
You have said that humanity's ultimate survival then depends on colonizing the solar system.
It has taken about 4 billion years for life on Earth to develop to the present stage. During that period, the main threat has been from collisions with comets every few million years. But now the man-made dangers to our survival are much greater and ever-increasing. If we remain confined to planet Earth, sooner or later we will destroy ourselves. The only long-term survival plan that works is to spread out into space. The sooner we start, the better.
Do we need to do it, yes or no, by the end of this century?
It would be a good idea.
What are we not doing to prevent these disasters that we absolutely should be doing?
Not acting with sufficient urgency about climate change.
Do you think we will survive?
Maybe.
I hope so.
You do wonder, what has he thought, you know, while sitting on the chair? Because I'm very sure there's so many things left that he's not probably told us, or, you know, not been publicly released. It may be, you know, just too controversial, or like almost everything that Hawking says in the media is a headline. You know, he's one of those where even if he could tweet out, it would be, you know, one of the tweets that just break the internet itself, right? So it's scary to think what else he's actually has thought about.
Well,
that's never really
know, ultimately
told us.
He's a person with a very big brain, but he's still a person. So he still has all of those same kind of positive and negative things that we all have about us. His fears and his hopes, they're not going to be any different. It's just, I guess, with his fears, he can actually think them through to a much further degree than a lot of us are able to. But I I don't think he's kind of, I don't think we should kind of try and deify him. He had a fantastic mind. He did fantastic things, but we should remember he was a human being. You know, just when you see him on episodes of things like Big Bang Theory or the Simpsons, you can see the humanity and the sense of humor of the man, and those qualities are just as important as the things that he did for science, I think.
One that he's probably quite close to, sadly, he could never see this happening now, but you know, he says that we got to find new home outside of Earth if the human race must survive. He said that countries must collaborate to create a moon colony within 30 years. And besides focusing on Mars, he's actually urged investors and scientific community to travel to the Alpha Centauri, which is one of the stars that's closest to our solar system. And scientists believe that habitable planets like Earth may be orbiting that star itself. So, you know, traveling to just beyond our solar system, beyond our galaxy, that's...
Well, that's the thing. I mean, we think about going to Mars as this incredible thing, and the distances involved are immense. But when you put that into the
scale of it,
of the entire universe, it's nothing.
Nothing at all.
We do have an awful lot of space to gather, but you know, we don't want to get out to Alpha Centauri and find that there's Ewoks already there or something like that. You know,
but you know, having said all this, though, we've got tons of respect for Professor Stephen Hawking, and it was just, I guess, for all of us looking at all the tributes and reading up all the the memorials that and all the quotes and things that he said. The best part about it is that we've actually lived in the same time where Professor Stephen Hawking was alive. That itself should give you goosebumps.
Absolutely, but also his work lives on. You know,
I
mean, Einstein is still very much alive in that sense, because his work is still very much alive. It's still being built on and expanded. And exactly the same, I think, with Stephen Hawking's work. I mean, like we said, we don't even have the technology to prove or disprove a lot of his theories at this point. So his work is going to live on for a very long time. It's going to be an awful long time before we can actually see the fruits and the results from that. And once we do get results from that, positive or negative, that will help springboard the next generation of thinkers to take that knowledge even further.
And that's the beauty of the power that his brain had, to be able to come up with theories that it's sort of mathematically proven, but haven't been proven in reality yet, because we don't have the technology.
Sure, because we can't go into a black hole and have a look at the singularity.
Don't have that technology yet, but he's able to come up with this theory, and the beauty of it is, like, maybe even a million years from now on, we would still be talking about Professor Stephen Hawking. Also, before we go, I will leave you with, I guess, one of my most favorite or memorable quote, the one that really speaks to me from Professor Stephen Hawking, in terms of you gotta not look down at your feet, you gotta look up into the sky, and this whole entire speech that he had really inspires, whether you're a believer of space and universe and science, or you're just an average Joe going about your daily life. This will really speak to you, and never give up, as what he would say in this this speech. Anyways, like you said, Matt, Professor Stephen Hawking, you will be dearly missed. BFM 89.9.
So remember to look up at the stars and not down at your feet. Try to make sense of what you see, and wonder about what makes the universe exist. Be curious. And however difficult life may seem, there is always something you can do, and succeed at. It matters that you don't just give up.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.